Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies, also known as Talking Pictures Podcast. Joining me, as always, Bill McCuddy.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor, I'm here. I feel like we're in a Senate confirmation here.
Oh, that's coming.
Known as Exhibit A in our lawsuit against... all right, so, yeah, we're here.
Bill Bregoli.
Yes, I'm here.
And joining us, one of our Talking Pictures regulars, our friend and confidant, Jack Rico from Showbiz Cafe.
Yes, thank
hey,
you
Jack.
Very much.
I've
How
eaten there
you?
Many times, as I've said
Let's
before.
Let's get right into
the
it.
Food
I want
is
to
so
talk.
Good.
I want to talk Wonder Woman. This is in your.
Have you guys seen it?
Bill Bregoli.
I saw it last night.
I would. Okay, so.
Well, first of all, banned in Lebanon. Did you see that about an hour ago? They've decided because she's Israeli. Or
is that why? Not because she's too, like, she's not wearing the.
She served in the army. So we're talking about, is it Gal Garcia? Or
Gal Gadot.
Gadot.
Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
She is Latina.
There's a T on that. She pronounces the T on the end.
Gal Gadot.
Gadot.
She was Gadot.
So
she
we're was wait, so in Lebanon, they're not waiting for Gadot.
Exactly. They're well, definitely not waiting for
Well,
Gadot.
She was Miss Israel or something like that.
She was also in
true?
The Fast and the Furious franchise.
Miss Hadassah, I think.
Yeah. She's gorgeous. Speaking of the Fast what? And the Furious, as we've said many times, we're here in New York City, and New York's finest just drove by.
Yeah, I don't know if that's being picked up on the microphone.
Well, we can hear it.
Oh, believe me, we can hear
but,
it.
But I would like to know, first of all, let's start with this. Okay, a lot of promotion on this movie. A lot of hype. Both
just
you guys,
like there
Bill
was
Bregoli
for Baywatch,
Jack.
Just like there was for
like everything.
Yeah. Pirates.
Yeah, we'll get to pirates. And how
yeah,
it
yeah
tanked.
But the screening.
Well, no,
last
but everything's
night,
tanking.
The screening
pirates
last night. The screening last night was like J-Date. You should have gone, man. I tell you, I never
really?
Saw so many Jewish women outside of a Century 21 than I saw
For
last night
wow.
at
Wonder Woman.
The Wonder Woman screening. In fact, a woman, Karen, who's been on our podcast, was sitting in front of me, and somebody said, you excited for this? And she said, oh, yeah, this is it for us Jewish girls.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
They're dying to see this movie.
Well, this is supposed
I didn't know
to be
that
the
Karen
savior.
James was Jewish.
This
well.
Is supposed to be the savior this with so many duds. And I guess the question for you, Jack, supposed to make $87 million this weekend. Is it going to be, does it have legs? Does Wonder Woman have legs?
Absolutely. Well, she definitely does have legs and pretty nice legs at that. But ultimately, you know, this is a movie that's being estimated at $175 million globally for opening
What
weekend.
Studio this is?
This is Warner Brothers.
Okay.
And they need
and,
a hit.
There's
and
a female
a DC,
director attached.
It's DC, right?
It's a DC extended universe. So Warner Brothers does not necessarily have the DC. It has DC, but not as a DC movie unit until recently.
Well, they have Batman and they have Superman.
But remember, that never belonged necessarily to a DC unit. And so what
well,
they
they're trying to emulate the
Steel,
Marvel cinematic.
They started
universe.
Noticing that Marvel was definitely taking off. They wanted to kind of replicate it. So they owned a comic book, DC Comics, and said, look, why don't we kind of just do what Marvel is doing? But it's turned out that it's much more difficult than what it seems. For Wonder Woman, this is considered now sort of the redeemer film. This is the one that is going to redeem all the, and I'm not going to say flops, because $800, $900 million for Batman versus Superman is not a flop.
Yeah, but that sucked.
But it hadn't, but
and
it's
that
a
was
polarizing
last year.
Film. All their films that they've done have been polarizing or have been flops. This is the only one that has seriously gained a lot of acclaim and a lot of appeal within the critics.
Is there any, okay, the way I liked Ant-Man, which is but probably on paper sounds to be the most unappealing movie to make a movie.
Yeah, this is a much better film.
Okay, and it's
overall.
But it's funny. Ant-Man was funny. Is there any humor in this
Absolutely.
Movie?
Absolutely. It's a nice mix of action, adventure, human, and romance, and actually plays off as a good date movie, believe it or not.
Yeah, there's a scene in the boat where Chris yeah. Pine's character is, she says, well, do you want to sleep with me? He says, oh, no, we're married. She's just like, what's wrong with your civilization?
Exactly. So there's a lot of throws in there to
Some
romance
humor.
And sex, but all very PG-13.
Is it Chris Pine or Chris Evans?
Who's Chris Pine from
Chris
Star,
Pine.
Star Trek.
I get all my Chris's confused.
And so I think what the thing about this movie, the reason it works is, A, it's not overly complicated. It's not stuffed with fat. That
That's
the, other
the problem
have.
I have with all these comic book movies is they're just
bloated
right. Take Superman versus Batman. Just I understood what was going on, but I didn't understand why it was going on. In other words, what?
So there's not a lot of backstory here. There's not a lot
Cumbersome. It's an origin story. So there's enough backstory in order for you to understand where she comes from. There's a lot of things that I even know about Wonder
Woman.
Hey,
there are girls on horses doing tricks, man.
Right.
There's Amazon women. On the moon.
The original Wonder Woman took place in World War II, but they decided to change it to World War I for whatever reasons.
This movie takes place during World War
I? 1918. Yes. Exactly.
The entire movie takes place during?
Yes.
Which should
and
be the kiss of death.
The beginning of the end, right. But for this particular case, they decided to hire Patty Jenkins, which I thought Catherine Bigelow, the female director who had done
Hurt Locker,
I thought was a better candidate. But, you know, I was talking to the editor-in-chief of Rotten Tomatoes, Matt Atchity, and what he said was they didn't want to deal with the big ego, especially supposedly Catherine demands a lot. Julie Taymor also demands a lot with Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark on Broadway. So they felt like Patty Jenkins would do the best job here, and I think she served it well. There's a clearly
defined...
What has
she done before?
She did Monster. The independent film Monster.
Right.
The one that Charlize Theron won the Oscar for, Monster.
There is a movie? Yes,
yeah.
That's exactly the one. There's a clearly defined villain. There's a clearly defined heroine. And in this particular case, the movie at the core is really about love. Remember that last line of the film? She says, you know, there's light and dark in all of us. It's how we choose to behave in this life,
yeah,
whether we have war or peace. So that's what the movie is all about.
That sounds hokey. So you're saying it comes across well. It plays well.
But
and there's no credit after the credit scene.
All right, Bill Brigoli.
Yes.
But allow me to finish this point, because it's extremely important.
No, go ahead.
The thing about Wonder Woman more than anything, Bill, is that this is a movie that is coming at the right time in our society. And I feel that is because anybody who would criticize this film right now, especially if it's a male critic, is going to get pummeled by everybody. It's in vogue right now to be a sort of a male feminist. This is a movie that they call a movie quadrant film, which means that it appeals to men, women over 25 and under 25. So basically, it's for everybody. And that's why this works.
I'll use a less politically correct term. It's a date movie.
Yeah.
It's a good date movie.
And if a president grabbed this woman's pussy, she wouldn't take it. She'd like slam him.
Oh, she'd slam him. She put the lasso of truth around them. Too.
So that's what
you
you're saying.
Enjoy.
It's a strong female lead in a summer when we haven't had anything like that.
I don't like movies that are dominated by action, where action.
Oh,
takes,
don't worry. This is plenty talky. If anything, it got too talky in some
so
spots.
It's not overly action.
It's not perfect. It's slow. It slows down a bit, and it's talky.
And the humor quote. You'd say just a couple of lines here and there.
That's
like a
good
James
no,
Bond movie or like throughout the
brings,
whole thing.
When he brings her to England and she's trying on dresses and she looks ridiculously wonderful and everything and is getting way too much attention, they're trying to dress her down, and even when she's dressed down she looks gorgeous, but they make fun of that. They make fun of
how well, I'm with Neil looking. I like a little humor, and I'm telling you, when I first heard about this woman being cast, because she was a relatively unknown actress,
an Israeli actress.
Yeah, I was thinking, I want Amy Schumer to do this. I want
I
want an R-rated raunchy kind of like goofy.
No, you didn't.
Do I have
really
to put the belt
that
on again? Yeah, I thought that could be a really funny reboot for the thing. So, well, hear me out. If this had been a lousy movie, it would have been a pretty good idea. But you're saying this is a good movie, and so it doesn't need that kind of
because it's innocent. You know, there's an innocence about Wonder Woman as Diana, where she's trying to figure out the world in the process. Remember, where she lives is invisible to the world. It's not on any map. It's invisible, literally, in the film, and they discover it serendipitously. Right, and that's when she literally comes out of this invisible island into the real world, had never seen a man before. So all those Amy Schumer moments, there's some of that spread throughout the film, but not as raunchy as Amy Schumer was.
Right. Well, let me ask you guys a question. Since you've both seen it, is this Titanic for 12-year-old girls? Will they go and see it 2 and 3 and 4 times?
It's Titanic.
Is it that
it's
empowering?
Not that
is it
not that, that romantic?
Okay, let me tell you a great
but
superhero movie.
I'm trying to
movie
think of what it would
okay
be.
Okay, I think the original Spider-Man
like
with
Frozen
Tobey Maguire was a great mix of story. It's an origin story. Not that Andrew Garfield crap. That first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man was really good. I mean, you see how he became the hero. Good action scenes. All that great stunts about flying around. You had James Franco in there. That's a good comic book movie. Is it on that level? Is it that kind of movie? Or is it...
It's 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, which means it's the highest rated or ranking superhero film in the history of the site. Now, I spoke to Matt, the Rotten Tomatoes editor-in-chief, and we had this sort of conversation about, well, if it stays at 96%, that means Batman, The Dark Knight, is 94%. Is it more acclaimed? And I think what ultimately we got up to is, this movie is not a masterpiece. Just because you see a high-rated volume, it's not a it's a solid film that delivers something for everyone. And it is much better in terms of a straight line than all the other DC films together. But it's not better than a lot of these Marvel films.
I think that number's
Iron Man or Avengers.
I think that number's going to go down.
Yeah, Armand White hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah, I think, listen, I got news for you guys. Yeah. I got a news flash for everybody. The way studios pick who gets to see their movies is going to change dramatically in the next 6 months. Certain critics will get to see things before certain other critics do, because they've just gotten so bitch-slapped by Pirates and by Baywatch, both of which had a lot of...
Well, would Pirates be considered a financial dud? I mean, it...
Well, it's too early to tell, and it cost a boatload, no pun intended.
Makes a lot of money.
Yes, of course it does, but the point is, they got like 16 or 17% on Rotten Tomatoes, and now the gatekeepers at the studios... Gatekeepers at the studios are saying, wait a minute, does this hurt a movie that, for example, like Baywatch, that had a very high approval rating of people who wanted to see it, and then it got slammed, and then nobody went to go see it?
But I think that...
Someone's actually suggesting that they're going to stop doing critic screenings.
I don't think
that it was a piece about it in the Hollywood Reporter.
I don't believe that's going to happen. And even if you stopped it and put select critics in that you knew would give you favorable reviews so you could up your score on Rotten Tomatoes, I think then Rotten Tomatoes would probably lose some sort of credibility that would like leak out.
Rotten Tomatoes has credibility?
No, well, it averages a lot of critics. You could do top critic score.
Listen, I guarantee you that the movie we're talking about, Wonder Woman, has a 96 because no one from the New York Times has seen it yet. I guarantee
I sat right
it.
Next to A.O. Scott. Okay,
so has his review gone up yet?
Yeah. I saw it this afternoon, right?
So we
good.
All do this for a
review
living.
Review this afternoon is very good. It's so much
he liked it? Oh, he gave it a positive review?
He sat right next to me. He was with his daughter.
All right. We all do this for a living, okay? How many people are going to see movies based, whether it be on demand or renting getting a DVD or hitting the movie on Netflix, based on the Rotten Tomatoes score? How many people are doing
that? That's a really good question.
I'll tell you.
I do it. In the business. So I'm saying, how many people, you know, just somebody sitting in the Midwest somewhere like...
Joe Popcorn.
You know.
That's the term. Joe Popcorn.
The popcorn.
What does Joe
family?
Popcorn do?
Popcorn going to Rotten Tomatoes. And why isn't Metacritic, which does the same thing as Rotten Tomatoes, why is Rotten Tomatoes, everybody talk... Well, people... That's
Metacritic
the one that
doesn't get as good a name, that's all.
Metacritic?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's a Metacritic.
Wonder Woman is now 94%.
Okay.
So it's
it went down 2%.
It would have been better if it had been 20 minutes shorter.
All right. Well, maybe.
But
Bill
you can say that about almost everything.
Yeah, but this
you,
one
are you free
actually.
Bill McCuddy to see a screening of it if I got us a screening of Wonder Woman?
Huh?
Would you like to see Wonder Woman tonight?
Sure. I'd love to go. All right.
Okay. Anyway, moving on, let's talk a little bit about. You mentioned Amy Schumer. Let's talk a little bit about Kathy Griffith
her head at CNN.
But got in a lot of trouble this week. And before we started recording this podcast, you know, I was saying, you know, I mean, what do you think? But do you guys think that's that big of a deal? She's getting a lot of flack.
Listen, I think she crossed the line. It's the president's head and it's bloodied. It's decapitated. I mean,
Patton Oswalt had the best tweet. He said, I didn't know she didn't like Alec Baldwin, but even I think this is going too far.
I think it
crossed
the line.
A joke. It's a joke off of
Listen,
a joke.
Bill, let me ask you a question. You do comedy. You know, you do stand up. I've always heard that within comedy, because you're hiding behind the veneer of comedy, anything is game.
What are you trying to say, Jack?
I'm saying that you could take a controversial topic, and because you say it in a comedic tone,
funny is funny.
Funny is funny. So the question is, why didn't this work? If she was
well,
trying to be
funny?
Well,
first of all, I wasn't particularly...
Please jump in for me.
I wasn't offended by it, but I was saying, I don't think it was funny. I'm not offended by the thing, but, you know, I don't think like, oh, that's funny. I didn't think that was funny. Go on, Bill.
Look, there's definitely a question of whether something crosses a line or not, and some people cross lines routinely in their act and push it, and some people don't. Kathy Griffin is definitely an unfiltered comedian who will say whatever comes into her head, and it'll make Anderson Cooper laugh.
So she's
Anderson
a shock
Cooper,
me.
She is a shock comic. Anderson Cooper threw her under the bus, saying that he was offended by it, and then CNN decided, okay, you're not going to be on our telecast anymore. Your question of whether I do lots of dark humor. I do stuff that's crazy dark sometimes when I get up there. But I couch it around nicer things, and I try and drop it in as an oh my God moment. You know, Chris Rock says, I don't want to get a laugh every time. I want to get a laugh, then I want people to go, ooh, then I want people to hate me, then I want to bring them back. Because that's what makes it interesting to him. That's what makes a good show for him. Dave Chappelle, the same way. They have jokes, but they're also taking you down a darker path sometimes, and then they bring you back, and
why
they close strong.
Why do you think
strong.
This one didn't work?
This is a standalone piece, something that I'm guessing she did. I didn't even been reported, but who was this for? Was it for Vanity Fair, or was it for... It was obviously a photo shoot for a magazine, and I don't know who...
It's not funny. I mean, there's no humor in it. I mean, what's the joke? It's just not
the
funny.
Shock. It's the shock.
I'd like to...
More of a hatred.
Like, I'd like to do to this man what ISIS is doing to... It's a questionable taste. There's no question about it.
A guillotine in the background and dressed up in a cute little French revolutionary uniform and then held up his head. It actually might have worked.
Were you offended by it?
In context.
No, I wasn't offended.
Were you offended by it?
No, I wasn't.
Were you offended by it?
I was.
You were offended.
It's our president's head. I get it.
When I say offended, I'm not talking about that I reacted in such a way that I, you know, knelt on my knees and I was like, oh my God, how could this possibly be? The offense was mild, but what I took from it more than anything was she went too far. This is A, our president, whether you like it or not. B, there's people being decapitated by ISIS,
That's
all over
true.
The place.
You know,
yeah,
that's
true.
Have
true,
some
but,
sort of, you know maybe true. There's a family member that did get their husbands or sons or somebody that they know, a loved one, heads decapitated. So be subtle with it. You know, there's other ways of getting back at Trump without having to show such graphicness.
But are there really? And is it? I mean, I think the timing was right for somebody to say, this is too far. Okay, there's a whole bunch of people in this country that are not happy with President Trump. And this is, everybody's testing the water about how disrespectful they can be. And this was the one over the line. Okay, there's the line now.
But then Kathy, one can make that argument that President Trump has crossed the line in terms of some of the tweets that he says.
What, like,
and some of the things that he's done on the Bush bus.
Does anybody know have any idea?
It
was a typo that went round the world. Jimmy Kimmel said, I couldn't have written anything funnier than Covfefe. I mean, that's like...
He was trying to write the word coverage.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay, there you go.
And then...
He's not exactly a good speller anyway.
No, I think he's a little, lacking in the...
Is that something we really want in a president? The ability to spell. When he's talking about NAFTA or NATO, we don't care if there's a typo.
So, do you guys go to Broadway a lot?
Yeah.
Okay. So, the Tony Awards are
probably,
next Sunday.
Probably not, 10 people listening do, but let's get
Sunday.
Them... Let's do a podcast just for them.
No, but I just want to say that... I don't want to get into the specific nominations. Maybe we'll do that next week. But I have to tell you that...
Who's hosting again? Who's
Kevin
hosting
Spacey.
Again?
Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey is hosting the
Song
the
and
Tony.
Dance, man.
Oh, yeah.
And he's promoting House of Cards.
And he's funny. And he does impressions, and so maybe
And he's a great singer, by the way.
He did Beyond the Sea. He did Bobby Darin.
Mm. Bobby Darin, yeah.
That was
great.
That was a hit.
I went to a concert where
promoted... Yeah, so did I.
Lincoln Center?
No, I went to... It was an event, and he was doing like five or six of the songs.
He did a full concert where I was at.
But he was with a band,
Full band, yeah.
But I have to tell you, when I was a kid, if you look at all the Tony nominations... there was great stuff that was on Broadway that was fresh and new.
Well, you're talking about Eddie Cantor. You're talking about Al Jolson.
No, I was at that Abe Lincoln performance of My American Cousin. I'm going way back. Now, when I was a kid, a lot of the stuff that I would see on Broadway, a lot of the plays, not musicals, became movies. All the Neil Simon stuff were plays first and comedies, and then they became movies. And you'd like, see
well,
a
before
lot of
that, even the Marx Brothers right. would do all their
like
shows on Broadway.
Murray Shizgle, and you'd see Same Time Next Year. These aren't even Neil Simon. And they would all eventually become movies, and you'd say to yourself, yeah, I saw the play. And now, you know, Broadway, it's it, just most of it, with a few exceptions like Hamilton or Dear Evan Hansen, which is also great, both of which are musicals. In terms of just plays, there are a few, but generally speaking, the risk is so high on Broadway to mount something where if it gets a bad review in the New York Times, it's just wiped out, and it takes so long to get a play to Broadway that I'm not seeing that. I think the great playwrights are writing for movies and writing for television. They're really not writing for Broadway. It's not like the old days where, oh, there's a new Eugene O'Neill play, and here's a new play by Edward Albee, and you know, you just don't see like these great. There are a couple of people that do it, but even Aaron Sorkin, who started out writing, A Few Good Men, went off and started writing movies and television. You know,
David Mamet.
You know,
Mamet is one of the few. Mamet is.
Well, he makes movies too. The point is what? That it's becoming like Hollywood.
I think it's becoming.
Musicals are the blockbusters. And
I think it's becoming, with a few exceptions. If you look at all these Tony nominees, most of them, and you go just look at what's on Broadway. They're revivals. Hello, Dolly, which is supposed to be a great production with Bette Midler.
Right.
It's nothing new. It's a revival.
Right.
You know, and just look down at all these things that are on Broadway. It's like, yeah, I saw that 20 years ago. Yeah, Les Miserables is back. Okay, well, it's like how many productions of that? Cats has come back to Broadway. Right. You know, but now we're doing it with, you know, it's all old material. If you look at all the musicals on Broadway, I mean, some of them, they're very good revivals, but where's the new stuff? That's what I'm saying. Where is the new stuff?
It's all on television.
It's not a business. Broadway is a business.
Beautiful, the Carole King musical, that was new, fresh, and original. But there are very few things like that.
This is the thing. Broadway right now is a business that is based on safe. Meaning yes. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is a brand name. Everybody knows it. Everybody loves it.
Busloads of people coming in from New Jersey and Connecticut.
Well, it's not only that. Tourists. After the New York hip people see the thing, then they want the show, to use your words, Bill, legs to stick around for a couple of years. So there's a lot of tourists that come into the city,
yeah.
And they a lot of them don't speak English, so they don't really aren't that concerned with plot. So it's like, oh, pleasant song, great dancing, look at the sets. You know, that's kind of what it is. It's in a way. You could say that about action movies. We're talking about Pirates of the Caribbean. Okay, I don't know how it did. It did okay domestically the first weekend here, but there's movies that it doesn't really matter. You sell them internationally. Plot becomes secondary, and it's all about special effects and explosions and action sequences. Or we're sitting in Bill McCuddy's apartment. I'm looking at a James Bond poster here. If you want to go back to an original model from 50 years ago, right, it's like, do you really care about the plot that much if you don't speak? It's like, look at the beautiful girls. Look at the great locales, look at the gadgets, you know, the plot, and look at the actions, chase scenes, you know? So I'm saying Broadway, you're not doing that, but you're doing the equivalent, the stage equivalent of that. Beautiful costumes, beautiful sets, beautiful dancing.
I'll go a step further. You know, you're talking about the plays themselves, and they're not really originating.
It used to be great plays.
You know where the great ones are coming from? And I wish I could think of a couple examples, but there are here a couple this season. They all seem to come from London's West End. Mm-hmm. Every time there's a great stage play that isn't a musical, would you agree, Neil?
Yeah.
They always say, oh, this was great. It was a hit in London, and they bring it here.
Yeah, but I think
they're
that's...
doing that with the Harry Potter thing.
I think that's
huge.
That alternates back and forth.
For...
Broadway, a lot of Broadway stuff goes to the West End, and a lot of West End stuff comes to Broadway. And I think there are different periods of time when more Broadway stuff is going to the West End and more... Like, Phantom started actually on the West End, mm-hmm. and Hal Prince brought it here.
Yeah.
So
is anybody going to watch the Tonys? Let's get it back to somebody who's actually listening to this podcast and gives a shit. Like, will anyone watch the Tonys if this is what's happening to Broadway?
If I'm around next Sunday night with nothing to do, and I'll probably flip it on.
All right,
and watch
I got a thing for you. Is anybody going to watch it if and when most likely Bette Midler doesn't sing during the Tonys?
Does that matter?
Why is she not?
Well, that's
sing?
The thing. Doesn't matter. The New York
is
Times
there a thing?
An article saying that her. The production would rather do their, if they want a big Hello Dolly number, like Hello Dolly, the production wants to do it remote, do it on their stage rather than
interesting.
Music hall.
Well, they did that with Hamilton at the Grammys.
Right, and it
It worked.
But the Tonys doesn't let the Tonys.
If the Oscars allowed it to do it.
CBS doesn't.
You know, this
like
Hello Dolly thing has been a big pain in the ass from the time it. Since you want to have this conversation, I'll enlighten you about one thing. Hello Dolly didn't give anybody any tickets. It didn't invite any critics to anything.
Is that true?
It was pre-sold out. It was like they didn't give a shit about it, even if it got reviewed or not. No one could get into it to see it to review. This is just another example of they won't come. They won't show up at. Is it Radio City?
Radio City. They will bring David Hyde Pierce to do a smaller stage number, but they won't bring Bette, and they won't. And they
well,
won't
they
do
did Hamilton.
Dolly.
I remember.
But why wouldn't they
the
want
before?
Broadcast CBS at the Pinnacle Award Show for theater?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
How
crazy.
How is that something that Bette
it's
doesn't
crazy.
Want to be a part of?
Well, it's a limited run. They probably sold out most of the run. Probably
but it's the prestige of being at the Tonys.
Well, Hamilton.
Again, when she's gone, I'd like to see Amy Schumer in this part.
Hamilton did it from their theater, okay?
No, I think Hamilton. Didn't the cast of Hamilton show up at the regular?
No, it was they went live to whatever theater it was.
Well, Jack just said that was the Grammys. Are you sure that was for the Tonys also?
Oh,
right.
Wait. Was
You're
it the
right.
Oscars or the Grammys?
You're right, Bill. It was the Grammys.
It was the Grammys, right.
It was
the Grammys.
Well, but,
You're absolutely right.
But let me ask another question. Wouldn't James Corden get a bigger audience for this than Kevin Spacey?
Well, James Corden, I believe, is hosting the Grammys, which is coming back to New York.
The Grammys, but I'm talking about the Tonys now.
I know. Yeah, well, I don't think Kevin Spacey's a big draw.
And Hugh Jackman's busy.
Yeah, I think they reached out to you, Jackman, you know. There's some stuff on VOD coming out and on demand. Wakefield's coming out, the Bryan Cranston movie.
Yeah, did anybody see that? That just snuck in and out of the multiplexes. Do you know about this? Cranston just decides one day to move into an ad. Wakefield.
Wakefield.
His name is Wakefield. He decides he wants to see if his family would miss him if he left. So he goes.
He hides
in the attic. And he starts watching his family. He's married to Jennifer Garner.
Why?
Why is he married to Jennifer Garner?
Why
she's
is he
hot.
Watching his family?
I don't know. I haven't seen the film, and I'm sorry that I brought it up, but it just it's new on demand along with a couple of other things. Did anybody see Fist Fight with Ice Cube?
No.
Where he says he's going to fight another teacher at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of 3 o'clock High. Remember
3
that
o'clock
film?
High, yeah. That's a good movie.
You know, there's a television series that's coming out on Showtime. I have to watch this, and when I watch it, I'm going to talk about it. But with your comedy background, Bill McCuddy.
Oh, you know, that looks bad.
It does look bad, but I don't want to
Melissa
say
Leo
it
and
it.
It's,
but it's basically...
I'm dying up here. What's it called?
Mitzi Shore was a woman who ran the Comedy Store in Los Angeles.
I performed for her.
You know, in the 70s and the 80s, and Jay Leno came out of there, and so did, well, Jay Leno, they all worked the New York clubs too, but Letterman came out of there, and
definitely
Sam Kinison
Letterman
came out of there.
Kinison.
And this is kind of Jim Carrey, who's the executive producer on this thing, is kind of recreating the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, and he has these people that are like what that whole vibe was but it looks like terrible. It looks like,
right.
Again, I don't want to, I'm going to check it out, but it's kind of like, you know, they were struggling comics. Their aim was to make it on the Tonight Show.
You know what it feels like to me? It feels like if Funny People, which we all think is a great movie about stand-up, is the Saturday Night Live of comedy movies. This is kind of the Fridays or the, you know, the Mad TV version. It just looks like.
That's very interesting. That's a very good comparison.
That's what it feels like when I watch the trailer for it. You know, it's like the poor second cousin.
Yeah.
With Melissa Leo, who's a great actress, as the Mitzi Shore character, you'd think it would be amazing, but it looks dead on arrival to
Speaking
me.
Speaking of comedy, anybody going to watch House of Cards? No?
No.
I mean, Kevin Spacey's hosting the Tonys.
Yeah, I'm sure that's one of the reasons.
This is the perfect season to imitate and replicate whatever's happening in the real White House.
You know, I lost track of that after, like, the second season, and somebody told me it got kind of stale after he became the president. Is anybody else following that
no,
in this group?
No, I'm following it, and I've been obsessive about it. I think it's one of the best things Netflix has. At least the one that is the most engaging in terms of shows that they have, dramas. And that
more than Stranger Things.
Well, you know, Stranger Things is more of an homage to the 1980s Spielberg films.
Right.
You know, this is the closest thing to politics and to reality of the politics that we're having at the White House that's out there right now.
What about Veep?
No, that's a comedy. I mean, you could argue that the White House is also a comedy.
So, if you're doing that show, you're the showrunner, and you've got.
the real
Kevin
life.
Spacey. Do you talk him into, do you talk the writers into writing him like crazy and over the top like Trump?
I would.
Do you have him tweeting? Do you have him going?
See, now that would have been great. Kevin Spacey tweeting Frank Underwood.
Well, I
it may happen.
Speaking about
have
TV,
you seen the show?
Yeah. I have not watched it lately. No. Mm-hmm. Just in the beginning, but now it's like
I lost interest after the second season.
Now. A lot of shows, you know, start out great. There was a show called Revenge that had a great first season
on ABC, right?
It was a great first season, and then I don't know, you know, either they pulled the. I can only imagine the cast didn't change. They must have pulled the writers and given them other shows or gotten deals because. It became unwatchable and too confusing. You couldn't even follow the show anymore.
Plus, she got revenge, and then the next year she's got to get revenge again.
It's like, no, she never really got the revenge.
Like The Affair.
I mean, remember L.A. Law? So David Kelly was writing all the episodes, and those were great. And then he left to do Picket Fences, and they had the same cast was there, but the show just jumped the shark and became terrible. So, you know, it's behind the scenes. Is really, I mean, you have the same actors. They haven't gone down in quality, but it's the people that are writing the show. Listen, I'm very disappointed with, you know how much of a fan I am of Stephen Colbert and how I think the genius was that Colbert Report. It was a work of art. It was a masterpiece. And, you know, and I think he fell in, although he's beating Jimmy Fallon in the ratings and he's, you know, because
his Trump monologue is pretty good every night. But you have to admit.
But, you know, it's first of all, I think that he's fallen into the same. Look, I'm doing this critically, not ratings. OK. I think the guy's a genius. I think Colbert Report was the greatest thing going.
You think it was better than The Daily Show with Jon Stewart?
Well, he came out of The Daily Show.
I think, but was it better?
Yeah, I think it was. I think in its day, at its prime, it was better. But The Daily Show in its day, when it had Stephen Colbert, Stephen Carell, Ed Helms, Rob Corddry, Samantha Bee, and Jon Stewart as the anchor, that's the all-star team. I mean, that's an amazing. That lasted for a couple of years. That's a pretty amazing show. But Colbert was amazing to me. But this is the same trap as when Letterman went from 12:30 Innovative and Brilliant on NBC doing late night with David Letterman to getting that 11:30 slot. Or, you know, or Jay Leno, who was one of the most edgiest stand-ups. You would never know it unless you saw him 35
Evil Jay.
Years ago.
What? When he would go on Stern, Stern would go, come on, do Evil Jay.
Or he would be on Letterman as a guest, you know, in the early years. And he would you could YouTube it. It's just scathingly funny. What's your beef? What's my beef? You know, let me tell you. You know, but then he got that 11:30 Tonight Show, and it just became, you know, watered down and terrible. Now, I think Colbert is still funny, but I don't think it's anything. It's like it can't hold a candle to the other show. This big furry hat routine that he does, this other thing where he goes into confession.
Or where he lays on the ground with stars and they look
at
the sky. He doesn't have a top 10
Alpha
list.
Alpha Dog of the Week, or The Word.
The best thing is his monologue.
Yeah,
it is. And I don't stick around because I'll tell you something else. He can't get the guests.
Cheating Death with Stephen Colbert.
I can't believe he's winning and he's still got A guests that are like
that
B
say?
Sitcom people.
Well, what does that say?
And well, he's got
district.
Bad bookers because they're very competitive.
That was, we interviewed these congressmen and just ripped them a new asshole. I mean, it was a great show. So I think the innovative stuff in late night is happening with The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, where there are
Seen it.
Where you go back to this.
I can't watch it.
I
don't like him. I don't like Trevor.
Well, he won me over on election night. Colbert was like a deer in the headlights because he was live and Trevor Noah was live. And Trevor Noah had prepared for the possibility of Trump winning and had there was a guy. I can't think of the guy's name. He's an African-American correspondent for the show. He's brilliantly funny. Roy Wood Jr. And he kept drinking Pepto-Bismol as the results came in. And they would kept coming back after commercial. And first it was like a little of the bottle. Then it was like a bucket. Then it was like something that was the size of like, you know, like, I don't know, half the studio. It was like, it was very funny. Colbert did not prepare for the possibility of Trump winning and just was kind of like.
Yeah, he was sucker punched.
Like
the rest of America.
I think Seth Meyers is.
And that's
a great
my other
rival,
thing.
Yeah.
Seth Meyers' monologue, and he does a bit.
The closer look.
Yes. Really, really brilliant and funny.
And where's
great
John Oliver?
So do you listen to your...
John Oliver's great.
Are you listening to yourselves in this conversation?
Yeah.
You like bits and pieces of the shows? We like the karaoke of James Corden.
I don't like...
If we're an audience, we're just saying. If we like certain things about shows, then that's what's going viral and that's all people are watching. If there's not a reason like there was for Johnny Carson to sit around and watch him with everybody because he was going to be different with Dom DeLuise than he was with the little old lady.
In the old days of Johnny Carson, the guests would stay there, as opposed to, like, right. You have your piece and you go
Corden,
next up on
Corden
the show.
Corden does that, too.
In fact, he
likes
everybody.
He likes everybody at once. That's more interesting to me than the rest of his show. Yeah.
Well, he's trying to do something different. But the point is, no one is tuning in and staying with somebody for the whole hour. We're either switching around. Mrs. McCuddy and I go from Kimmel to
You like Kimmel?
Fallon
I like Kimmel's
to,
monologue.
I like Kimmel's...
I like This Week in Unnecessary
Kimmel
Censorship.
Why isn't Kimmel the number one late night show? I mean, he has the best celebrities on his show.
He does.
He has an ongoing... I mean, do you remember every time... First of all, he also hosts the Oscars now. So he gets
Right, and he's signed for next year to host the Oscars.
I know. And right. So he gets all those Oscar people, the biggest celebrities on the planet, to do skits. The question is, why isn't he number one?
Why isn't he number one? I don't know.
It's a very small pie, guys.
I'll
do you know
you
what
the,
number
I'll
one
tell
gets?
You, I like Kimmel a lot. I think he's very funny. He devoted an entire show once to in character as Jay Leno, which it was brilliant.
I remember that.
He even interviewed the guests as Jay Leno, mm-hmm. and he was fawning over it. It was very, very funny. Why isn't he number one? I don't know. You know, it's a very good question.
It's a very small...
It's a lead-in thing.
It's a very small pie.
I don't know.
You know how many viewers you have if you're number one in late night? If you're Colbert right now?
1.3 or something?
3.5
million.
And
what did Johnny Carson have back in the
40, 45 million?
Get out of here. He had 45 times
like,
more viewers?
He had 50 million for Tiny Tim and Miss Vicky getting married. I think on a regular night, he had 20 to 30 million people.
Yeah, that's when there were three channels.
It's three channels, Neil. And nobody else had a late night show. Joey Bishop for an hour.
Well, this was the problem with Joey.
If Talking Pictures had three channels, was on when there were three channels.
This was
your
the problem
with
Colbert in the beginning, apparently, was that his stuff wasn't going viral. And Jimmy Fallon stuff, he was very ingrained in the viral community.
In the social media community, right.
And Colbert was executive producing his own show in the beginning. They brought a producer in.
CBS This Morning.
Yeah. All right. So do we want to talk about...
Fallon did his show. One last thing on this, so you're understanding something. Fallon did his show online for like a month and a half before he took over the Tonight Show.
I thought he did it for a year.
No, well, I know he did it for a long time.
So, Bill Bregoli shed some insight into the firing of Scott Pelley.
I don't have a whole lot, to be honest with you. I'll tell you about it next week when I stick my ear through
Bill's
the ground at
office
CBS.
Is like right next door to Scott Pelley's office, which I read they were cleaning out yesterday or something.
They were cleaning it out. And when they clean out,
he's on assignment.
They clean out at CBS, let me tell you.
All right. Before we go, I want to say, I want to amend it. The last couple of weeks, I had watched the first half of this Netflix series called Master of None with Aziz Ansari. Uh-huh. And I was not that impressed. And Lisa Rossman, our colleague who's here, was saying, you got to watch the rest of it. Because I wasn't that impressed with the first half of it. There were 10 episodes. I thought it was too food-centric. Everything was food-centric. Well, over the last 2 days, I watched those last 5 episodes. And I have to tell you, I think that it is the best thing I've seen on television. In terms of, if this thing doesn't win the Emmy, it was nominated for an Emmy for Best Comedy last year.
What's so special about it?
Each episode, and again, let's discount the first 5, which were okay. I just didn't think it was up.
He was in Italy. If you don't know the show, it's about he and his family.
But these last 5 episodes, they're mini movies, and they're brilliant. They're like, one of them is, I was telling Bill McCuddy before you guys got here, that, and we are in Bill McCuddy's apartment today here on the West Side, I mean, Upper West Side, the Midtown West Side? Or?
Facilities for sitting around
near
talking
Carnegie
movies
Hall.
Provided by Bill McCuddy.
Right. there's one standalone episode that just follows everyday New Yorkers, what they're doing. Like, you ever think about a doorman in a luxury building? Like, all the people that he encounters that live in the... Like, there's like 15 minutes of all these people that the doorman is encountering. One guy comes up with like a mistress and said, can you call me a half an hour before? Give me a heads up if my wife comes in here. And the guy walks away. I mean, it's just like...
What's the show about? I still don't understand what the show is about.
It's different last year than this year.
Okay. The season one, Aziz Ansari, he's a struggling actor in New York City and not a comedian. He's an actor, although in real life he's a comedian, unlike Jerry Seinfeld. And he doesn't play a character called Aziz. His character's name is Dev. And the first season basically was his relationship with this girl that he met, and it's kind of like a New York City relationship, okay. You know.
His real life parents are in the show, and they're pretty good.
Mm-hmm. You know, no commitment really to each other in the beginning, but then they kind of start having feelings, you know, and the sex starts before the relationship starts. It's very, very interesting. This season is At the end of last season, he breaks up with that girl and he goes to Italy to take up. He's very into food and he wants to learn how to make pasta, and he goes to a village in Italy. And this season picks up. The first couple of episodes take place in Italy. The first episode is a parody of the Vittoria II movie, The Bicycle Thief, and it's in black and white. Little shades of color here and there, but generally speaking, I think the whole thing pretty much was in black and white. And there are a couple of episodes in this. I'm just watching this going, like, this is better than almost any.
So the
any
problem with your Emmy theory, and I'm glad I'm going to see it now.
Some of these episodes are better than any movies that
I've
seen.
Okay, all right, calm down. Come in off the
it's
ledge.
It's brilliant.
We believe you and agree with you, and whatever Lisa Rossman says, you know I always agree. However, the problem with your Emmy theory is that you have to submit, and you get to pick it, an episode.
I think they changed that. I think there was flack from the Emmys.
There's no way they change it, Neil. There's no way they're watching six episodes of something or seven episodes.
If they did not change it, and that is the theory, there is one episode that you could put in there that will blow away.
Okay, so people listening now who've never seen the series,
or
people listening now who've never seen the series and can watch one episode, if you can only watch one episode, what's the one you're talking about?
I would watch the episode called I Love New York.
I Love New York.
Or I would watch a 57-minute episode, which all the backstory, you have to know a little bit of the backstory. He's in love with a girl that's engaged from Italy who comes to visit in New York. And I don't know the name of the episode, but it's episode 9. If you go to Netflix, no, they tell you all the numbers. Of it.
Yeah.
It's episode 9.
We understand how numbers
season
work.
Season 2. It's a movie. It's unbelievable.
It's a movie.
I sat there with my wife. We just looked at each other's names. Like, I just can't believe I watched this thing on television. It's a movie. And each episode has its own title.
You know, like movies do come out on television.
But it's like a movie that was made.
Can I point something out? This is now the length of a movie.
I know. It is. So, right. So we're going to wrap it up. And next week, what are the big movies that are opening next week?
The Mummy.
The Mummy, finally.
The Mummy.
Yeah, I got a screening for the
guys. Interesting to see how Wonder Woman
does. We want to see that. Can we see how Tom...
I'm excited for this film.
The trailer looks like shit.
I don't think so.
The best thing about that so far has been the trailers.
I don't like it. I'm not going to prejudge the movie without seeing it. I don't like the trailer. I can tell you the trailer.
I'm not going to prejudge it. The trailer looks like shit.
I don't like the trailer. You know what I mean? All right, we'll talk about The Mummy.
I'm not bringing anything negative to it. I'm just saying it looks bad.
We'll talk about some other stuff. And Jack Rico from Showbiz Cafe, our friend who did Talking Pictures all the
time. Who, by the way, we should mention just at the last second replaced someone who couldn't make it.
Justine Browning who was supposed to be here, had another
commitment. At this performance, the part of Justine Browning will be played by Jack Rico.
Thank you, buddy.
All right,
thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And thank you, Bill Bregoli, as always, for your insight. And,
and we want some sound next week. Are we going to hear from Tom Cruise next week? From The Mummy? Yeah, all right.
I'm sure he'll talk very earnestly about this movie, because you know how Tom is.
Tom Cruise
standing on a box, but he'll be talking.
We'll talk next week about how you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement every time you interview Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I remember mine.
All right. Baywatch tanked. Isn't that
Wait, did you really get an NDA from Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to have
what?
To sign a thing.
I thought you guys were joking.
We had to sign.
No, yeah.
And what's her name? The publicist.
They came in and they took a journalist.
I got
out
a release form
because they didn't like who
with,
he was working for.
When I did the Casino Junket. You had to do something with Sharon Stone.
Tom Cruise wasn't in that.
You know, I'm saying there
what,
are.
What,
there,
what,
I
why
I
the
never,
NDA?
I never signed them.
I was kidding about an NDA, but it was a document that said you can't ask Tom Cruise if he's gay. You can't ask him anything personal. I'm sure on The Mummy you can't ask him anything about Siri, not the computer on the phone, but his daughter. You just have to ask about the movie.
At that point, I'd rather not even interview him.
And Pat Kingsley was the name of the publicist I was trying to think of. She's not with us anymore. But she used to sit right next to Tom Cruise. Out off camera, do you remember this, Neil Rosen?
I'm listening.
Whose head is wandering around the room?
Listening.
He's like a
Pat Kingsley.
Well, do you remember she used to sit right off camera and she would look right at you as you were
There's a lot of publicists like that.
Tom Cruise
me in the room.
Yeah, Cindy Berger was another one. I remember I was.
But they would follow me, and sometimes they would be sitting in the hall, and I'm like, "Why are you following
me
in the room?"
I'll tell you a quick story. I was Cindy Berger, who is the president of PMK. I was
very powerful
interviewing Laura Linney, and I asked her to defend a criticism. Of a movie, and Cindy, who was off, she wasn't even in the room. She was outside watching the TV monitors,
right.
And as soon as I asked that question, like the movies, barged in. She almost like knocked the door down and said, "You do not ask that question. This interview is over." Wow. And I said, "So she's not allowed to defend a negative criticism. This is a fluff piece, then. Everything I do, so there's no journalism in this." And I walked out, and I understood that Laura Linney. I understood that Laura Linney supposedly was upset that Cindy had reacted like that because it's a representation of her. Wanted to send me flowers, but couldn't get my information. So.
She don't send you flowers
anymore.
Well, I'll save my story for next week. Anyway,
I'll tell a Kevin Spacey one about not getting my tapes back, and also about at a junket, and also about Martin Lawrence. But that'll be next week.
Next week, and you'll hear my Mia Farrow story next week too.
Let me move to the edge of my seat.
There you go. About conditions before talking to. Of course, just writing it. We'll talk about it. Anyway, Bill Bregoli, Bill McCuddy, Jack Rico. I'm Neil Rosen. Thanks for sitting around talking pictures with us. What do we do here every week, Bill?
We spend way too much time talking about movies, and this podcast is proof of it. We also watch the bad movies, so you don't have to.
We'll catch you next week. Thanks.